Hello, and welcome to Oxtalk for Tuesday, the 21st of November 2023. My name is Guy, and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers by Elizabeth Dale and Stuart Jeffries, and recorded at home by Elizabeth Dale and Janet Proudman. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 7:33 a.m. and sunset is at 4:07 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events which happened on November the 21st in history. In 164 BCE, Judas Maccabeus rededicated the temple in Jerusalem, an event that is commemorated each year by the festival of Hanukkah. In 1877, Thomas Edison announced his invention of the phonograph, a machine that can record and play sound. In 1953, the Natural History Museum in London announced that the Piltdown Man skull, initially believed to be one of the most important fossilized hominid skulls ever found, is a hoax. In 2017, Robert Mugabe formally resigned as President of Zimbabwe after 37 years in office. Born on this day in 1787 was Samuel Cunard, British-Canadian shipping magnate who founded the Cunard Line, establishing the first scheduled steamship connection between North America and the UK. Born in 1894 was Max Miller, born Thomas Henry Sargent in Brighton, English comedian known as the Cheeky Chappie. And born in 1924 was Christopher Tolkien, English academic editor. The son of author J.R.R. Tolkien, he edited much of his father's posthumously published work, including The Silmarillion and the 12-volume series The History of Middle-earth. Tolkien also drew the original maps for his father's trilogy, The Lord of the Rings. And deaths on this day. In 1993, Bill Bixby, American actor and director, best known for his role as scientist Dr. David Banner on the sci-fi drama series The Incredible Hulk. In 2011, Anne McCaffrey died, an Irish-American writer known for the Dragon Riders of Pern science fiction series. She was inducted by the Science Fiction Hall of Fame on the 17th of June 2006. And in 2017, David Cassidy died, American actor and musician. He was best known for his role as Keith Partridge, the son of Shirley Partridge, played by his real-life stepmother, actress Shirley Jones, in the 1970s musical sitcom The Partridge Family. This role catapulted Cassidy to teen idol status in the 1970s. Now, on to the news. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles for this week.
A long-serving tower captain from a church in Bicester is hosting a bell-ringing competition and hopes to attract people to his team. St. Edberg's Church will vibrate with the sound of musical chimes and bellows of its bells on Saturday the 25th of November, as teams of bell ringers from Oxfordshire and beyond will gather for the annual 10-bell striking competition. The expected half a dozen teams will each be judged on their delivery of a set piece of music, which in past contests has included Little Bob Royal and Steadman Caters. The St. Edberg's Tower captain, Steve Walker, said, "This is an important event for us. I'm pretty sure a 10-bell striking competition hasn't taken place in Bicester. Prior to 1998, we had only 8 bells. The 2 additional ones were donated by Bicester Town Council and Richard Stevens, a former tower captain, in 1998. It was quite a moment for Bicester when these bells were donated, and this competition is very poignant because it's something Richard would have dearly loved, a great legacy for him." The 69-year-old, who has lived in Bicester since 1983, hopes that by holding this event, people will come and listen and potentially find an interest in joining the bell-ringing team. Mr. Walker added, "We're desperately short of ringers. It's widespread across the country. If you look at pictures of previous 10 bell striking competitions, you see most of the ringers are well into their senior years. It's not just the case with competitions, it's ringing generally. Most of us at Bicester are in our 70s and 80s. I'll be 70 next year. We have one girl who's just turned 16, and the next youngest person is over 40. We need to recruit younger people, otherwise it's going to be a dying art." Mr. Walker claims that many church bells are rung rarely simply because there aren't enough people to do it. He said, "When you consider the size of Bicester as a town, we really are short of bell ringers. We only have 3 or 4 resident ringers who show up regularly. We do have to rely on people coming from other towers at Stratton Audley or Launton. I'm hoping this event will draw people's attention to the bells." Mr. Walker wished to emphasise that bell ringing isn't what you expect it to be. He said, "It opens so many windows for people. There's a brilliant social element to it too. It's a great skill to acquire and presents a physical and mental challenge. Plus, you get the joy of listening to the bells." If you're interested in joining Bicester's bell ringing team, you can contact Mr. Walker via email at steve.walker247@hotmail.com or call on 07983868234.
An unlit section of a hugely busy cycle path has been causing safety concerns for cyclists, but there's uncertainty around who should be fixing the problem. 3 lights along the Marston Meadows cycle path have been out since bridge repairs were completed last month, with reports being submitted by the public to Fix My Street. City Councillor for Marston, Mary Clarkson, who uses the cycle path herself, claimed the route is hugely busy and due to the lighting issue has become very dangerous. She said, "The message we're all getting on Fix My Street is it's in progress. It's really frustrating and dangerous. The path is used by school children and people who are heading to the hospital. It's a very busy route. Not to mention that there are women who won't walk along there now because they don't feel safe. As a cyclist, I have lights on my helmet and bike, and I'm always keeping an eye out for people walking or cycling without lights so there aren't any collisions." A spokesperson for Oxfordshire County Council said there is an electrical supply fault at the location affecting the light. The issue has been passed on to Scottish and Southern electricity networks to carry out the necessary repairs. "We have asked them to carry out this work as a priority." The electricity company claims the lights are all live and in full working order. A spokesperson for the company said the issue appears to be with the new column replacements, which haven't had their heads connected. Oxfordshire City Council is aware of this and working to resolve the issue on their side.
Annalise Dodds of the Oxford East constituency abstained from SNP motion which called for all parties to agree to an immediate ceasefire. Dozens of Labour MPs backed the motion, however, inciting a major rebellion in the party with the resignation of 8 shadow ministers and 2 parliamentary private secretaries. Ms. Dodds said in a public statement, "Over the last 6 weeks, we've seen so many horrendous scenes, both in Israel and in Gaza. I sincerely hope there can be a cessation of violence by both parties, and there are reports that one may be about to be negotiated." She continued, "This Labour amendment I voted for, unlike the SNP's amendment, is specific in stating that all human life is equal, and also that there have been far too many deaths of innocent civilians and children over the past month in Gaza." Among the 125 MPs who did not vote against immediate ceasefire were 56 rebel Labour MPs, as well as all Liberal Democrat MPs, including Oxford West and Abingdon's Leila Moran. No Conservative MPs backed the SNP motion. Labour's own amendment, calling for longer humanitarian pauses, also did not pass, with MPs voting 290 to 183 to reject it. The House voted on Wednesday night to reject an SNP amendment to the King's speech calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, and against a Labour amendment calling, among other things, for longer humanitarian pauses. Pro-Palestinian protesters marched past Parliament as MPs debated and voted on the issue. The Commons leader Penny Mordaunt said some MPs have come under increased threat after the Commons voted against backing calls for a ceasefire. Ms Mordaunt made her remarks in the Commons during a session of questions related to the business of the House. She said, "The debate last night did show this House its two main parties and the bulk of members united in its support for Israel's duty to protect her people and for there to be an end of suffering for civilians, all civilians, and for the longer-term solution for peace. Since the vote last night, I know some members have come under increased threat. No matter which way people voted, it will have been a considered decision. No matter whether you agree with them or not, it is their duty to exercise their own judgment. Today, all members should think about what they can do to defuse such threats made against our colleagues in this place."
Wish, the Waste Innovation Station headquarters, a climate action museum, has opened in Kidlington. The museum launched with 50 visitors, including voluntary groups, school heads and councillors. The project was inspired by community members requesting support in making the right choices to live sustainably. A pilot phase has been completed, funded by the National Lottery Climate Action Fund, which helped community members reduce their household waste and provide feedback about what future support was needed. Wish is now open Monday to Friday from 9 to 5. Visitors will find quizzes and interactive displays to boost their understanding of small steps that can be made to protect the environment. Exhibits include repurposed items and creations crafted from waste plastics, textiles and musical equipment. Charwell Collective founder and managing director Emily Connolly said, "It's a really amazing feeling knowing that so many people came together to make this truly unique space all together, to share skills and knowledge and help one another build climate resilience. Thinking back to writing the original Wish proposals, it just goes to show what can happen in a short space of time when people are given a chance to build the solutions they want for problems that we all face."
Nearly half of homes in Oxford have been given an energy efficiency rating of D or below, figures show. An environmental charity has said there has never been a stronger case for retrofitting inefficient homes. Houses and other buildings are given an efficiency rating of A to G, based on numerous factors, including levels of insulation, the type of central heating used, and how modern the building's light bulbs are. Figures from the Office of National Statistics show 47% of households in Oxford were living in homes with a rating of D or below as of March. The average energy efficiency rating for the area is 69 out of 100, just above the average of 68 across England. Ratings are generally only given when homes are bought, sold or rented, with these figures only for homes that have received ratings in the past 10 years. Mike Childs, head of policy at Friends of the Earth, said, "With households expected to struggle with high energy bills for years to come, the case for ending the nation's heat-leaking homes scandal has never been stronger." He urged the government to introduce a street-by-street insulation programme for homes, with a focus on those most in need. "This would not only slash bills, it would also boost energy security and massively cut UK emissions of planet-warming pollution," he added. The figures further show the average home in Oxford produced an estimated 2.8 tonnes of carbon dioxide in the year to March. Older homes are overwhelmingly less efficient than new ones. Just 17% of homes built before 1930 were in the top three rating bands, compared to 90% of homes built in the past year. Energy poverty charity National Energy Action said the most deprived families are hardest hit by poor energy efficiency. Peter Smith, Director of Policy and Advocacy at the charity, said, "The UK government promised a fair and affordable transition so the most vulnerable are not left in cold, living in expensive-to-heat homes. Yet there's been glacial progress to meet the government's legal requirements to bring all fuel-poor homes in England up to a reasonable standard of efficiency by the end of this decade. In 2014, the government set a target of bringing as many fuel-poor homes up to Band C as possible by the end of 2030. A spokesman for the Department for Energy Security and Net Zero said, "We have allocated over £12 billion in energy efficiency and low carbon heating during this Parliament, with a further £7.5 billion being made available from 2025 to 2028, to help create homes fit for the future, provide long-term funding certainty for industry, and grow supply chains to scale up the delivery over time. An additional 300,000 of the UK's least energy efficient homes are also in line for improvement under the new Great British Insulation Scheme, helping to heat homes and save family money on their bills," they added.
Queues have continued to build at temporary traffic lights on a major Oxford road as a result of continued emergency works. Barriers and temporary lights have been put in place on Botley Road at the junction with Binsey Lane near Waitrose. The works, undertaken by British Gas Distribution Company SGN, led to one motorist saying it took him 30 minutes to get to Oseney Mead from Seacourt Towers on Friday morning. Queues on Botley Road come shortly after drivers were told to expect major delays at the Botley interchange on Oxford, with 2 weeks of gas works underway. The Oxford Mail has contacted SGN for more information on why the works on Botley Road are taking place and for how long they are expected to last.
A ball python snake has been found abandoned in a box in an Oxford park. A shocked member of the public found the reptile next to a bin in the Rivermead Nature Park on Monday, November the 6th, with information about its breeding and health stuck to the box. On the box, someone had written that the snake was called Barry and stated, "Handle with care, ball python, non-venomous reptile enclosed." There was also a typed up piece of paper which had information about when the snake hatched, the dates of its first and last shed, and information about when they last fed. The member of the public took the snake home for safekeeping before contacting the RSPCA. An inspector, Malwina Gazurek, collected the snake and transferred it to a specialist exotic centre. She said, "This poor snake was abandoned and very lucky to be found and rescued in time. Snakes are unable to produce their own body heat, and with the colder weather we're having recently, the snake may not have survived for much longer on its own. Whoever abandoned this snake knew plenty of information about it, which is why it's baffling to understand why they were abandoned. If they weren't able to look after the snake anymore, the snake should have been taken to the exotic centre." The abandonment comes as the RSPCA launches its Join the Christmas Rescue campaign, which shows that abandonment calls coming into its emergency line are at a 3-year high.
A new living wage has been announced for Oxford by the City Council, which will reflect high living costs. The wage will be £12.49 starting from April and is set at 95% of the London living wage, which has been set at £13.15. more than 120 businesses and organisations are signed up for the hourly minimum pay launched in 2008, of which the live list can be viewed by visiting the City Council's website. Councillor Susan Brown, leader of Oxford City Council and Cabinet Member for Inclusive Economy and Partnerships, said, "I'm incredibly proud that over 120 businesses in Oxford are accredited as Oxford Living Wage employers. Paying the Oxford Living Wage not only benefits the employees who are being paid a truly livable wage, but it also helps employers attract new talent and keep staff. In addition, it also helps make our city a fairer one for everyone and means that local residents have more money to spend in the local economy." The council has said that Oxford is named as one of the least affordable places to live in the country, and as such it is encouraging new and previously accredited employers to commit to the new rate. Ms. Brown added, "I'd encourage any business or organisation that is considering paying Oxford Living Wage to do so and to become accredited through the city's scheme."
Motorists have been struggling through severe flooding on the National Road Network, which has had a knock-on effect in Abingdon. Drivers experienced delays up to 25 minutes on the A34 southbound between Abingdon and Marcham Interchange, as one lane was closed for approximately 5 hours due to flooding on Monday, November the 13th. A police vehicle was present to redirect traffic and cones were placed to separate off the flooded lane. Nathan Lee, County Councillor for Abingdon North and Cabinet Member for Public Health, Inequalities and Community Safety, said, "I hope the National Highways can sort out this flooding on the A34 as soon as possible. When the A34 snarls up, residents of Abingdon have to suffer the consequences of displaced traffic using the same roads as everyone else, and this morning is no different." Some motorists caught in the delays were baffled. John Hyland said, "This is the second time the A34 has been flooded like this in the last couple of months. It hasn't happened in my 30 previous years of living in Abingdon. Why now? What's changed and who agreed the planning and due diligence for it?" A second motorist, Steve Evans, owner of the Sprue Shop in Oxford, said, "It never used to flood. I wonder what has changed over the last year or so." Dr. Lee added, "Sadly, this kind of flooding event is becoming ever more frequent due to climate change. We need big, bold solutions." Councillor Pete Sudbury, Deputy Leader of Oxfordshire County Council and Cabinet Member for Climate Change and Environment, said, "Predictions of the impact of climate change are that we will see more rain in winter and less in summer. The surface of the Atlantic has been at record temperatures this year, and warmer water evaporates more rapidly, so the clouds coming in from the west or north contain more water, which falls as more frequent, persistent and much heavier rain. Not only will this result in the road surface being flooded more often, as drainage is overwhelmed, we would also expect more erosion and landslides on embankments, and we're seeing worse damage to road surfaces as water seeps through defects in the tarmac and softens or washes away the foundations, creating potholes or sinkholes. If the roads were in good repair, this would matter less, but over a decade of inadequate funding for maintenance means it doesn't take much extra to wreck the road surface." A National Highways spokesperson said, "Safety is our top priority at National Highways, and we regularly monitor the safety of all our roads in the region. The South East has experienced some particularly heavy periods of rain over the last few days, which left the ground unable to drain the water quickly. Specialist contractors have been on scene to get the water cleared. We urge people to drive to the conditions. In heavy rain, drivers should slow down and keep a greater distance between their vehicle and the one in front."
The spirit of Christmas past will be revived by a group of talented Oxford musicians. The Oxford Waits perform street ballads, dance tunes, airs and rounds in the style of a 17th century artist, all in traditional costume of the period. The five-piece of Tim Healy, Caroline Butler, Ian Giles, Edwin Pritchard and John Fletcher are launching a new album, A Jolly Wassail Bowl, with two concerts at Oxford's Holywell Music Room on Saturday, the 16th of December. The Oxford Waits take their name from a real-life band of city musicians known as Waits, who flourished in Oxford during the 17th century. Festive and wintry songs to be performed include a tune about the so-called frost fairs on the frozen River Thames. Concerts are enlivened by readings from diarists and poets, as well as songs performed on period instruments.
A coffee company is to close part of its Oxfordshire factory, putting up to 280 jobs at risk. Jacob's Dow Egberts is set to close the processing part of its factory in Banbury and make it a packing facility. The research and development labs will also close, with work transferring to the company's Dutch operation. JDE said the decision has not been taken lightly, but the factory was the least cost-competitive processing facility in its network. Unite Union described it as devastating news for its workers. The JDE spokesman said, "We have today announced proposed changes to JDE's Banbury factory. We're proposing to close the processing part of the site and focus solely on becoming a specialist coffee packing facility. This is an important and necessary change, enabling Banbury to remain a key facility in our network." He added, "The industry is operating in a challenging economic environment, and there is an overcapacity of freeze-dried coffee in our European factories, which is expected to remain. Banbury has been and continues to be the least cost-competitive factory in our network to process coffee. This means that changes must be made to improve the competitiveness of the site. Regrettably, this means around 250 roles are at risk of redundancy. We're also proposing to close the R&D facility at Banbury, which will impact a further 30 roles. If the proposals move forward, it is expected 134 roles will remain at the site," said JDE. Consultations over the proposals will start on November the 28th for a minimum of 45 days. Unite National Officer Paul Travers said, "The potential loss of so many JDE jobs is devastating news for its workers and Banbury as a whole. Unite will be offering support to our members at this difficult time. We will now be entering consultations with JDE and will leave no stone unturned in seeking alternative plans that are less damaging than the ones put forward. If jobs do have to go, we'll ensure our members' best interests are the priority, including negotiating against compulsory redundancies and for the best possible severance packages." Following the shock announcement this morning, Banbury MP Victoria Prentice said she would be meeting with the plant director later this week and urged concerned constituents to get in touch. She added, "I know this will not have been an easy decision for the management to come to, but JDE, like many other companies, are faced with having to adapt to some of the challenges associated with rapid advances in technology. While this has come as disappointing news, given how important the factory is to our town, no official decision has been made at this point. I will be speaking to the plant director later this week to discuss their plans in better detail." Comedian Matt Lucas was in Abingdon recently to sign copies of his new children's book. He made a tea time visit to Mostly Books in Sturt Street to meet his fans and sign copies of The Boy Who Slept Through Christmas. Mr. Lucas has followed in the footsteps of his former Little Britain partner David Walliams by writing a children's story. He told the Oxford Mail, "It's been a very busy day." Before arriving at the bookshop, the comedian had been due to speak to pupils at Larkmead School in Farringdon Road. A spokesperson for the school said earlier, "We're looking forward to hosting Matt Lucas to celebrate his new festive book, along with primary pupils from across Abingdon. The 49-year-old is known for his various film roles in Alice in Wonderland, Bridesmaids and Shaun of the Dead, along with playing characters in Little Britain and featuring as a host on Great British Bake Off. Mr. Lucas announced his exit from Bake Off in December last year after three series co-hosting with Noel Fielding. The popular comedian was replaced by TV presenter Alison Hammond after announcing he was stepping down from his role. In January, Mr. Lucas revealed he and David Walliams are brainstorming a new show after the comedy partnership quit their long-standing TV commitments. The pair found fame on sketch comedy shows Little Britain and Come Fly With Me, both of which they co-wrote and starred in. Speaking on the Zoe Ball Breakfast Show on Radio 2, Mr. Lucas said at the time, "So, me and David have started writing together again. We just thought, it's time, it's time. So we've sort of quit our jobs and decided to do that."
Childhood obesity rates in Oxfordshire have worsened following the coronavirus pandemic, new figures show. The Obesity Health Alliance said every child deserves to grow up healthy, regardless of their circumstances. It urged the government to incentivise companies to produce healthier products and restrict children from being bombarded with manipulative advertising. NHS Digital figures show 1,300 of 7,260 Year 6 pupils measured in Oxfordshire were classed as obese or severely obese in 2022 to 2023. This means 18% of 10 and 11-year-olds were in the highest two BMI categories as they prepared to leave primary school. This was down from 19.5% the year before, but above pre-pandemic levels of 16% in 2019-20. Across England, 22.7% of Year 6 pupils were obese or severely obese, down on the 23.4% recorded the year previously, but still above pre-pandemic figures. The data comes from the government's annual National Child Measurement Programme, part of its approach to tackling obesity, which records the height and weight of Year 6 and reception age children in state-maintained schools across England to monitor obesity trends. Catherine Jenner, director of the OHA, said, "All children have a right to grow up healthy, regardless of their circumstances." Ms. Jenner added, "People want easy, healthy options," and said if the government was to incentivize companies to produce healthier products and restrict advertising financially, it would have a disproportional benefit on those struggling to get by, freeing them from the harm caused by unhealthy food and drink. Ms. Jenner also highlighted the divide between rich and poor, with children living in the most deprived areas, 30%, more than twice as likely to be obese as those living in the least deprived, which were 13%. Dr. Mike McKean, Vice President for Policy at the Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health, said overweight children, of which 2 in 5 leave primary school, have a higher risk of chronic illnesses, mental health issues and lower life expectancy. Dr. McKean said that the disparity between children living in deprived areas and those in affluent places is unacceptable. He added, "To have these children at such a disadvantage before even starting secondary school is a national disgrace." The government aims to cut childhood obesity rates by half in 2030, but Dr. McKean said the root cause is poverty and deprivation, which are robbing our children of a healthy adulthood before they even start school. He urged the government to expand free school meals, increase financial support, implement a junk food marketing watershed ban, and introduce mandatory guidelines on sugar and salt in baby foods. The Department for Health and Social Care said it is committing to halving childhood obesity rates in 2030. A film by Swedish heavy metal band Sabaton, which combines music, animation and First World War history, has been screened at Oxfordshire's Military Museum. The War to End All Wars, the movie, is being shown at military museums around the country as part of remembrance commemorations. The rock band is known for epic concept albums linking real-life historical war events with heavy metal music. The 67-minute animated musical tells the First World War tales from Sabaton's most recent studio album, The War to End All Wars. It was shown at the Soldiers of Oxfordshire Museum in Woodstock, along with 14 other UK museums and over 120 mainly military museums in 29 countries. It is part of the band's History Rocks charity project, which they developed to help museums across the world by boosting their visibility and introducing them to a new untapped audience of heavy metal fans and history buffs. Ahead of the screening, assistant band manager Per Sundström said, "We're looking forward to sharing The War to End All Wars, the movie, with our fans and with everyone who values history and can't wait to present it to the world and see what the reaction is. We hope that positive things come out of this and that museums benefit from this never having been done before project." London's RAF Museum hosted the two Q&A sessions with bass player Per Sundström and frontman Joachim Brodén. Hundreds of spectators gathered in Oxford to mark Remembrance Sunday by listening to speeches and hymns and the ringing out of the national anthem. The day began at 10 a.m. with the gathering of military units, organisations and community groups between Beaumont Street and St Giles. Welcome speeches from the Lord Mayor Lubna Arshad and City Rector of Oxford Anthony Buckley were followed by a hymn and prayer. Mr Buckley's voice resounded, "Let us confess to God the sins and shortcomings of our world." Spectator Pavan Sukhdev, 63, a former student of University College, said, "Attending brought back memories," and Mina Menon, 64, added, "It's great for the community. I think the next generation needs to know about it because this is history and it's important." Oxfordshire MPs Leila Moran and Annalisa Dodds were among those who laid wreaths at the St Giles War Memorial. The Lord Mayor's speech touched upon the conflict in the Middle East. She discussed calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and paving the way for enduring peace. One veteran mumbled to the Oxford Mail that she should not be making any political statements. Army veteran Carl Davis, 57, who had served in the forces for 26 years, suggested that events such as that occasion were vitally important. "This is about remembering the sacrifice that people made for this country," he said. Remembrance started as being centred around World War I, but now it's for anyone who served Britain for our way of life. Two former serving officers, Neil Unsworth and Angela Unsworth, recalled their own experiences. Mr. Unsworth, a former infantry officer who said he had been involved in all the main conflicts of the last 30 years, recounted how he had many friends who died serving in the British Army. He agreed with his wife, a former RAF officer, who said, "What's important about today is that we're here for things like protecting the freedoms to protest. What better way to exemplify that freedom than what happened in London last Saturday?" Mr. Unsworth added, You won't find anyone who's a greater advocate for peace and ceasefire than someone who's been in combat, because we know what it's like. Thames Valley Police confirmed that all events were marked peacefully and respectfully across the weekend, in light of dozens of right-wing counter-protesters being arrested by police in London during yesterday's March for Palestine. A police officer in Oxford reported that the event had attracted a crowd of about 2,000, the same as in previous years.
The King and Queen had to get the brollies out when they visited Oxfordshire on the 14th of November. King Charles III and Queen Camilla waved off van drivers as they left the South Oxfordshire Food and Education Alliance Surplus Food Distribution Centre in Didcot. The royal couple visited the centre to kick-start the King's Coronation Food Project, which aims to bridge the gap between food waste and food need across all four nations of the United Kingdom. Charles and Camilla were given a tour of the South Oxfordshire Food and Education Alliance, part of Fair Share, a national network of charitable food redistributors. The King, who turned 75 recently, found himself twice serenaded with happy birthday as he and his wife met staff and volunteers to hear about the ways food waste can be used for social good. The King launched the initiative to mark his birthday in London and surprised a big issue seller with a generous donation. The head of state has penned an article for the latest Big Issue edition about food waste and those in need, and he handed seller Kelvin £10 for the magazine, costing £4, at the end of the event. The 61-year-old, who's been homeless for periods of his life since a teenager, joked afterwards, "He gave me cash. That does prove something. He does carry money." Kelvin, whose pitch is outside Somerset House, added, "He asked if I was in accommodation and about selling the Big Issue. I said it's got me through some bad times and it's had a positive social message." He said about the Coronation Food Project, "I think it goes to show he cares. He's reaching out to the general public." The King's 75th birthday was a working day for the monarch, marked by gun salutes across the capital. Charles will also host a Buckingham Palace reception highlighting the work of nurses and midwives over the decades as part of the NHS 75 celebrations.
Teenager Mercedes Goodhall has bucked a national trend by signing up to become an engineering apprentice with the Oxford Bus Company. The bus sector is traditionally a male-dominated industry, and fewer than 20% of engineers in the UK are women. Go Ahead Group and its operating companies, including Oxford Bus Company, work to encourage more women to join the industry, offering various opportunities to kickstart a career. Mercedes, 19, grabbed the opportunity to join a 3-year apprenticeship at the company's Cowley House depot, and now she is encouraging others to follow her career path. She said, "I love engineering. It's so interesting and I'm learning so much on the apprenticeship." Many people assume it must be challenging to be a female engineer in a predominantly male environment, but I have had an incredibly positive experience at the Oxford Bus Company. Mercedes developed her passion for engineering at Oxford Academy, and after gaining a GCSE in the subject, she continued her studies at City of Oxford Colleges. Her studies gave her the opportunity to have a tour of the bus company depot, which inspired her to apply for the apprenticeship after her studies. The Greater Leeds resident has just started her apprenticeship to learn the essential skills to enable her to become a fully qualified bus engineer. Mercedes said she found the environment welcoming, friendly and encouraging from the outset. "The guys were so welcoming that any nerves I had vanished quickly," she added. "I've always got on well with the guys in the depot, and I don't feel as though there are barriers to what I can achieve here as a female engineer. I'm glad to be on my current apprenticeship, and career-wise, I hope to stay on at Oxford Bus Company in a full-time role. I would highly recommend the company and the bus industry to other young women who are interested in engineering. It's a great working environment where you are judged on your merits. Luke Marion, Managing Director at Oxford Bus Company, said, "We are proud to be part of Go Ahead's initiatives to encourage more women to take up careers in the bus industry. Mercedes' story is a wonderful example of opportunities that are available and highlights the progressive approach we take to recruitment and training to create an inclusive and diverse workplace and culture. There are so many great careers within the bus industry, and I'd encourage people to keep an open mind and explore what we could work with for them in our group of businesses. Mercedes is thriving on her apprenticeship, and we hope she enjoys building a fulfilling career with us for many years to come." Oxford Bus Company is part of the Oxford Bus Group, which also includes Thames Travel, Pulham's Coaches, and Carousel Buses. It is owned by Go Ahead Group. The bosses of homelessness charities in Oxfordshire complained to the former Home Secretary after she suggested that living on the streets was a lifestyle choice. On November the 4th, Sue Ella Braverman posted on X, formerly Twitter, saying, "We cannot allow our streets to be taken over by rows of tents occupied by people, many of them from abroad. Living on the streets is a lifestyle choice." The post had been interpreted before her dismissal as part of a bid to become leader of the Conservative Party and prompted criticism, with a joint letter sent by the heads of homelessness charities in the county. The letter has been jointly published by Simon Hewitt-Everson, Chief Executive of Homeless Oxfordshire, Paul Roberts, Chief Executive of Aspire Oxfordshire, and Chris Keating, Chief Executive of Connection Support. It states, "Homeless Oxfordshire, Aspire Oxfordshire, and Connection Support refute your recent comments regarding homelessness, are saddened by your ill-informed choice of language that perpetuates stigma and misunderstanding, and urge you to reconsider your proposal to criminalise the use of tents by people who are rough sleeping. We all agree that compassion is the most important approach to homelessness, and that nobody in Britain should have to live in a tent on our streets. However, anyone who is experiencing homelessness in any of its many forms is genuinely homeless. It is also misleading and potentially damaging to suggest that homelessness is ever a lifestyle choice. The people we support in Oxfordshire on a daily basis have experienced extreme trauma and disadvantage throughout their lives. They may face issues with addiction and challenges with their physical and mental health, and they can struggle to access the help they need. They often have no support network around them and may be vulnerable to exploitation and abuse. These lives were not chosen and should not be persecuted. We urge you to consider strengthening policy and funding decisions that can help end homelessness by tackling its causes rather than criminalizing its outcome. The latter will lead to avoidable suffering and fatalities. Everyone has the right to a safe and suitable home, and we call on the government to advance and increase local housing allowance rates in the upcoming autumn statement so that everyone can find a home they can afford. We also invite you and your colleagues to speak with organisations like ours to achieve a better understanding of the challenges faced by people experiencing homelessness and hear firsthand some of the sustainable and practical solutions. Rough sleeper numbers in Oxford have risen slightly according to government figures in March. Figures showed 27 people were estimated to be homeless on a single night in Oxford in autumn last year, up from 23 the year before.
Oxford West and Abingdon MP Leila Moran told the Commons one of her family members in Gaza has died. The Liberal Democrat MP, who claims to be the first MP of Palestinian descent, said it was a most difficult day she'd had to endure in her parliamentary career. She has previously shared her worries about her family members trapped in Gaza. Ms. Moran told the Commons, "I wanted to let the House know that today I lost my first family member. The reason why this is important, having spoken about how they are in a church in Gaza City and how they didn't, I'm afraid, die of a bomb. Instead, they died perhaps for lack of food, perhaps for dehydration. Their health deteriorated in the last week and they couldn't get to the hospital they needed." Ms. Moran told the Commons she planned to back calls for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas as she raised the point of order about her family member. "Today I wanted to vote for peace. I wanted to be voting for a two-state solution. This is the only way these horrors will never be seen again. I wanted to vote for getting Hamas out of Gaza, and I wanted to vote for those reasons for an immediate bilateral ceasefire so that families like mine, but also families in Israel, don't have to endure this anymore."
The owner of a cafe in Oxford is hoping an agreement can be reached with his landlords so that his business can avoid eviction. Will Pouget, who runs the Faults and Garden Cafe in Radcliffe Square and cafe operators Fresh Connection, are facing a three-month eviction notice from the parochial church council of the University Church of St. Mary the Virgin. They are contesting the notice issued in May, and a county court hearing is due to take place. A petition from supporters of the cafe has now attracted more than 10,000 signatures. At lunchtime yesterday, people were queuing up to get into the cafe, which was packed with customers. Mr. Pouget would not comment in advance of the court hearing, and I would only say that he was hopeful that an agreement could be reached with the PCC. The PCC has said it wants to create a new social enterprise at the old congregation house where the cafe is based, and complete repairs to stonework, replant the garden, and work on a major redevelopment of the cafe facilities. It has committed £750,000 to the building works. It has released a new statement on its website yesterday. The statement said, "Regular visitors to the University Church will be aware of our plans to redevelop the cafe and establish a social enterprise. The PCC is responsible for the repair and maintenance of the old congregation house, its ancillary buildings and the churchyard, and must ensure that necessary works take place so that this significant landmark building is in a fit state of repair with accessible and energy efficient facilities. The PCC also hopes that development of the cafe as a social enterprise when it reopens will improve the quality of welcome to the University Church and further its work as a charity. The plans, which have been in development for almost 2 years, led to appropriate notice being given to the current licensee, Mr. Pouget of Fresh Connection Limited, to vacate the premises at the end of August this year, so that the PCC redevelopment plans could be undertaken. Recent meetings with representatives of the PCC, messages posted to the current cafe website, and comments given to the media by the business owners indicated that Mr. Pouget and Fresh Connection wish to avoid legal action requiring possession of the premises to be given up and to negotiate a settlement. The PCC and Mr. Pouget, as well as Fresh Connection, have tried to reach an agreed outcome in recent days, but have not been able to conclude terms. It is understood that the cafe and Fresh Connection has the right of an appeal if the county court judge decides the eviction should go ahead.
Oxford is still a tale of two cities, said councillors, after a damning survey exposed stark inequalities between the poorest and wealthiest areas. In the first resident survey since 2016-17, respondents from the most deprived area of Oxford, the South East, were more pessimistic about where they live, antisocial behaviour and the economy than people from other parts of the city. The Oxford City Council survey, which has been exclusively shared with the Oxford Mail, has prompted calls for greater investment in the city's poorer areas. This information should not come as a surprise, but it should act as a further catalyst for this inequality to be tackled. A lot of work needs to be done on this, and we can't have continuing inequality for our residents. It shows that Oxford is still a tale of two cities. The City Council has invested millions into the city's most deprived communities, including Barton, Rose Hill, Blackbird Lees and Greater Lees. This included £9 million on the Lees Pool and Leisure Centre, which opened in 2015, £5 million on Rose Hill Community Centre, which opened in 2016, and £1 million on Barton Neighbourhood Centre, which Prince Harry opened in 2019. But less than half of South East folk are satisfied with where they live, according to this new survey, compared with 84% in North Oxford, one of the city's most affluent areas. They had the most negative view on the state of the economy and the least confidence in the police and the council's ability to tackle antisocial behaviour. And a lower percentage believed that people from different ethnic backgrounds get on well. Ms. Aziz said the latter figure was really troubling, especially as there is an international crisis at the moment in Gaza. That is something that needs to be focused on. She said the City Council needed to invest more funds into these deprived communities, and her calls were echoed by other councillors in the area. Ray Humberstone said Blackbird Lees, the ward he represents on the City Council, had been disproportionately affected by the cost of living crisis. He said the ever-increasing rises in energy bills is one of the effects of the crisis that's causing major concerns in our community. Trish Elphinstone, an Oxfordshire County Councillor for Rose Hill and Littlemore, said people in her ward were struggling to make ends meet. She added that police presence needed to improve to discourage antisocial behaviour. "It's having enough police to match the problems in the area," she said. "There needs to be more presence on our streets. There are issues around drug taking and antisocial motorbike usage. It's the feeling of wanting to be safe that needs to improve." The City Council said the results of the survey would be used to help develop council services in the future. Cabinet Member Nigel Chapman said, "Our residents panel survey shows that overall, Oxford's residents are satisfied with Oxford as a place to live and work. However, we can clearly see that Oxford remains a city of two halves, with residents reporting key differences in experiences across the city. These latest results allow us to understand these differences and how we can continue to work to address them in the future. The Council's policies to build more genuinely affordable housing, council housing and shared ownership housing, help local residents impacted by the cost of living, and do more to tackle climate change, and these are in line with the residents' responses. It's not surprising the residents who are most impacted by the cost of living are most pessimistic about the city's economy. However, the city's economy is doing remarkably well, particularly in comparison with other parts of the county, region and country.
A football club on an Oxford estate has opened its doors to children with disabilities for a taster session after an organiser concluded there were not enough similar opportunities in the area. The free event, organised by Oxford Blackbirds Football Club, will take place at the Blackbird Lees Leisure Centre on Sunday, November the 26th at 11:30 a.m. for an hour and a half. It is being run for boys and girls aged 5 to 11 of all abilities, regardless of learning or physical disability. The club said it has joined forces with Fusion, Oxford City Council, and event sponsor, the Kelly Jackson Memorial Fund. Club committee member and coach for the under 12 girls team, Kirsty Greenough said, "Everyone should have a chance to play the game, to be involved and to have fun. We're just so happy that we've been given this opportunity. We've got to thank everybody, especially the Kelly Jackson Memorial Fund, who offered so quickly to sponsor us. It's like the whole community is coming together to make this work." Ms. Greenough added that the closest other club running a similar inclusive football event was Bure Park in Bicester, which she suggested was a long way to travel for those living out of the area. She said that there were also some events run in Summertown, but they catered more towards children with cerebral palsy. "My daughter has medical complex needs and is disabled, so this is very close to my heart, as it has been difficult for her to get into the game that she truly loves." The club has teamed up with the Oxfordshire FA, as well as Bure Park Disability Ambassador Adam Robinson, to organise the taster session. It added that attendees on the day could expect to meet several coaches, have a fun time, play a few games, and that parents and children would have the chance to meet each other. Another Blackbirds FC committee member, Barry Evans, said, "This is great news for the area, for kids with disabilities, and we have researched and found that others have to travel far to get to the nearest event like this." Ms. Greenough concluded that there had already been a lot of interest and questions from parents. She said, "I'm overwhelmed by it all, to be honest, but it just shows that it was needed in the community and that giving children the opportunity to be part of football is amazing. This sort of thing is completely lacking in our area. In our community, I think there is literally nothing else like this that we can feel is out there for our children."
The proposed site for a new burial ground has been identified as an area of archaeological interest. Oxford City Council's application to convert agricultural land north of Oxford Road and to the east of Horsepath Athletics and Sports Ground into burial space has been recommended for an archaeological field evaluation after an assessment found potential for prehistoric and Roman remains. The application includes a 7-hectare, low-impact, landscape-led meadow burial space, along with a new vehicle access site and a new footpath link from the existing council-owned car park to the burial ground. If approved, the application will also bring an open-sided shelter, several benches, signs and hard access ways. Headstones will be limited to 80 centimetres in height and made from non-glossy stone or hardwood. Access to the site will be provided for hearse vehicles, maintenance vehicles and on-site priority parking spaces. A spokesman for County Archaeological Services said, "The proposal site is identified to occupy an area of archaeological interest and potential, as identified by the archaeological desk-based assessment undertaken by Oxford Archaeology. This assessment concludes that a potential for archaeological remains dating from prehistoric and Roman periods may be present on the application site, and despite later cultivation, may have been subject to minimal disturbance and be well preserved. In accordance with the National Planning Policy Framework, we would therefore recommend that, prior to the determination of any planning application for this site, the applicant should therefore be responsible for the implementation of an archaeological field evaluation."
Police aim to tackle knife crime and violence in Oxfordshire with a week of action, education and awareness raising. The force wants to increase education and early intervention to stop young people getting involved in crime in the first place. Jules Batazzi, head of the Thames Valley Violence Reduction Unit, said, "Operation Scepter allows us to raise awareness of this important work, and we ask our communities to join us. We need parents, community leaders and young people to work together so that we tackle the fear, provide trusted role models, encourage young people to ask for help, and turn away from violence or carrying a knife. If you're worried, talk to someone, anyone you trust, because carrying a knife is never going to make you safer." Recorded knife crime is down 4% in the Thames Valley over the past 12 months. Between October 2022 and this year, 1,186 offences were recorded, which is 55 fewer than the year before. The Thames Valley is one of 20 areas with a Home Office-funded violence reduction unit, a partnership of all local councils, police, fire, education, health and community groups, with the aim of working together to prevent violence in the first place. In addition to coordinating the partnership response to violence, the VRU also funds a range of innovative early intervention projects. These include access to sport, support offered in A&E and police custody, one-to-one mentoring in schools and education packages. Thames Valley Police said tackling knife crime remained a force priority and that it was targeting known knife carriers. A mobile app deploys officers to hotspot areas across the force, providing a high visibility presence, putting officers in the right places at the right times. Tactics like stop and search, hotspot policing, and regular nighttime operations are also used as part of the approach. Knife amnesty bins are permanently in place across the Thames Valley and are being promoted as part of Operation Scepter. Superintendent Lewis Prescott Mayling, the force's strategic lead for violence reduction, said, "Knife crime and violence reduction are a priority for Thames Valley Police, and the latest results show that our approach is having an effect, with knife crime continuing to fall over the force area. Thankfully, knife crime remains low, but we continue to see tragic and shocking incidents across the region, too often with young lives lost or ruined forever. Any one incident is one too many."
A 9-year-old from Didcot has created his own car of the future based on a mini electric after winning a competition. Oliver Gorrod has beaten hundreds of other young visionaries aged 4 to 10 across the UK who submitted their ideas for cars of the future. The Mini Minds with Crayola competition was designed to inspire creative confidence in children and run riot with their imaginations by designing their dream cars of the future. Oliver was praised by competition judges for his creativity and future-gazing prowess. His design focused on nature, with the exterior of the car featuring different types of animals and foliage. The design, which was submitted by Oliver for the competition, was brought to life via a vinyl wrap that was then applied to the outside of a mini. Oliver said, "I can't believe I've won. It was such a surprise and it was so fun to enter as I love designing things. I like the idea of all cars being electric as they're better for the environment, animals and the planet. My car is designed as camouflage, so it blends into natural environments." Oliver's prize includes his winning design being made into reality using a vinyl wrap on a mini electric and a big bundle of Crayola art materials for him and his school. He will also get to visit the Mini Plant Oxford for a private tour to see how the electric mini is made. Federico Izzo, director of Mini UK and Ireland, said, "Children are renowned for their boundless imagination, and this is evident in the ideas they have presented. We had entries which focused on being better for animals, boosting the mood of those around them, helping to save bees, and plenty with a focus on sustainability. The creativity of the designs was fantastic. We are excited to bring Oliver's design to life and hope he will continue to innovate and dream big in the future."
The Oxford Playhouse is inviting theatregoers to snap up tickets for its eagerly awaited winter show, The Festive Pantomime. The highlight of the Beaumont Street venue's theatrical year, the Panto is its most popular show and an important source of funding. This year, it is the turn of classic fairy tale favourite, Jack and the Beanstalk. Written by Jack Council and directed by Toby Hulse, The production opens on Friday, November the 24th and runs until Sunday, January the 7th. The Playhouse team say, expect lots of laughter and slapstick comedy, outrageous costumes and toe-tapping sing-along songs, and, as is traditional, plenty of chances to cheer for the goodies and boo and hiss at the baddies.
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Ox Talk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496 062280. That's 07496 062280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website at www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspapers skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Ox Talk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.